Welcome, everybody, to the Thoracic Oncology Group Australasia podcast series. My name's Associate Professor Craig Underhill. I'm a medical oncologist in Albury-Wodonga. I'm a trialist, treat a fair bit of lung cancer. It's a great pleasure to be involved in this series and supporting the TOGA, this podcast series kindly supported by Takeda. So it's wonderful to introduce two special guests for this podcast series. First is Alexandra Golledge, who is a patient advocate and been a patient with lung cancer for 10 years now and been involved in a tele trial. So welcome, Alexandra. And Alexandra lives in Townsville. Our next guest is also from there, Professor Sabes Abison, medical oncologist from the Icon Cancer Center in Townsville. He's a guru of regional oncology and the father of telehealth and teletrials and teleoncology in Australia. So it's an absolute pleasure to chat to Sabe tonight about this topic of teletrials. Welcome, Sabe. So I'm just going to set the scene, Sabe, and just the answer to this question, I think, has possibly changed over the last couple of years thanks to the pandemic. But briefly, what do you think is the definition of a teletrial and what's the current status in Australia?
You are spot on, Craig. The teletrial definition has changed and the application has changed. So in my view, use of telehealth to conduct clinical trials. You know, before we were focusing on hospitals, but now it's homes, general practices. So I think a simple definition is use telehealth to clinical trials, wherever that is, what portion of clinical trial that is teletrial in my view.
I've noticed recently in the literature that in North America, they tend to use the term decentralized clinical trials. So I think maybe that sort of captures the field, the definition a little bit better, because it's all about decentralizing the functionality of trials, the governance of trials across a wider geographical population. Would you agree? I mean, teletrials is a kind of an Australian term. Do you think we're going to stick with that, or do you think we'll start calling it something else?
I think the good thing about teletrial is it's very specific and easy for people to understand, especially patients. Whereas decentralizing, you know, it may not involve telehealth. It could be a governance framework, you know, decentralizing. So we do have decentralized system in Australia for governance and LHD, HHS management. So, and also we got the grant for teletrial. So I think we probably will stick with teletrial in Australia for the time being, until such time that the system is fully ready for a truly decentralized system.
Yeah. Thanks, Sabe. I like your definition, Sabe, though, that it's really using telehealth to facilitate a trial. Alexandra, you've been involved in a teletrial. So tell us a little bit about that and which components of the trial telehealth used in the conduct.
Well, the trial I was on, Craig, wasn't originally intended to be a tele trial, but when COVID struck, it was transitioned fairly rapidly and seamlessly across to being a tele trial, which indicates how easily that telehealth can be incorporated into the design of a trial. The trial is structured around monthly visits with routine bloods taken, and then every 12 weeks scans are taken and you have a face-to-face appointment with the trial doctor. And that's all been able to be done remotely from where I live in Townsville using local providers and Zoom teleconferencing. And it's really just been very straightforward. I have my medications that I take on the trial sent up and I have all my scans done 3 minutes away and routine bloods just done locally, and I can leave the house, have the medical tests I need and be back, you know, back in my life, be picking up my son from school and not have any interruption to my life from the trial apart from that. So it's just brilliant.
Fantastic. So presumably the alternative would have been flying to town from Townsville down to Brisbane.
Yeah, well, the trial is based out of Sydney. So before it was transitioned to a tele trial for It was going to involve monthly visits from Townsville to Sydney, which, as you know, is two planes. And then, yeah, the monthly visits down to Sydney, and then every 12 weeks, obviously going down there again to have a face-to-face, another face-to-face meeting, which is both incredibly time-consuming and also expensive. And it doesn't just impact on me, it impacts on my husband who has a full-time job, it impacts on my son who I'm trying to shuffle around to various people to pick up and drop off because I'm no longer there. So telehealth for me has just been amazing to be able to stay at home and not have to deal with any of those issues.
Yeah, and you know, we all know about lots of patients who would just say, no, that's all too hard, I'm just not going to go on the trial, and so they miss out. So,
well, even for myself, I mean, I'm relatively young, I'm fit and healthy despite my diagnosis. When I was considering joining, that was a consideration for me as well. You know, am I able to fly down to Sydney every month? I mean, as we all know, 4 weeks goes nowhere. So every 4 weeks, you're getting on two planes, getting home late at night if you're trying to do it in one day. You factor in the cost of that. And it was a consideration, you know, for me as well. So if you were a little bit older or maybe more unwell, it would be something that you just wouldn't consider doing. Whereas if you can get in the car and drive 5 minutes or be driven off to your local centres, which are all in a, you know, sort of 20-25 minute interval around Townsville, then you're much more likely to say, to consider that as a treatment and look to take part in clinical trials, which again is so critically important because clinical trial participation is very low and should be a lot higher. So telehealth can really help facilitate that.
Absolutely. So I just want to follow up on two things that you said, just because I think it helps illustrate the whole sort of concept of teletrials and how this can work. But so it sounds like the physical examination component was overcome by you going into the local cancer centre and being examined by one of the local oncologists. Is that right?
Yes. So a part of the trial is having bloods sent off to America, which obviously is quite a delicate process. So my trial doctor down in Sydney has coordinated with the Cancer Centre in Townsville for me to go and see their trials team, much the same way as a satellite centre would do on a proper trial that was supposed to be a tele trial. And they, you know, their trial nurses obviously are able to do all of those sort of procedures. So they take the bloods and package them up and send them off to America, in the way that they need to be handled, and all the other things that would normally be done at a cancer centre down in Sydney, like imaging and blood tests, are just done at providers that are local as well. So it's just very easy and seamless.
Yeah, great. And you mentioned that the drug was shipped to your home. So just to note, the Medicines Australia preferred option as well is to actually ship the investigational product or the drug to an oncology pharmacy in your local town. You pick it up from there. So that's another way that investigational product can be managed.
Yeah, that would have definitely been another option.
Yeah, fantastic. I think it also highlights, you know, in rare cancers, especially there's a real groundswell from biotech who want to bring molecules to the patients and to the market quicker. So, you know, I think for these oral agents, targeted therapies, I think teletrials is going to have a real role. It has a role now and have an increasing role.
I mean, even for things which are IV infusions, if you're collaborating with a local cancer centre, then that would be a way of getting those sort of drugs as well. But certainly for oral agents, it's a no-brainer, really, that you use telehealth to increase your access pool.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So the drug can be dispensed locally, administered, and the administration log can be de-identified and faxed, or it can be now what we've seen in the pandemic era, is the ability to remote monitor. So the company or the sponsors or the CRO can actually look at the administration log remotely. So Sabe, you were going to jump in and say something there?
Yeah, no, actually that just triggered my memory about another evolution of the teletrial is that, say, if another site is involved, you actually can delegate the whole operation to that satellite site. So the primary site PI may never have to actually even see the patient using telehealth. So that's another evolution of the teletrial if you get the governance right.
That's right. And that can all be managed within a site delegation log, and that can evolve as people get more experience as well. And we've had that experience with IntelliTrial. So I was going to ask a question, Sabe, about some of the barriers and facilitators to IntelliTrial. So let's just talk about the barriers. So I think the pandemic's fast-tracked a lot of the solutions to the perceived barriers. Would you agree with that? And what do you think are some of the main existing barriers?
I mean, the barriers we identified during our pilot, and now we have the national program, of course, to enable those, to overcome those barriers. The barriers really, there is definitely extra workload for the satellite sites and the primary sites in terms of doing all the bureaucratic site activation work. But now with the IntelliTrial program, we have the regional clinical trial coordinating centers. They are supposed to help the clinicians to reduce that burden. But I think the other barrier still remains is that the collaboration with LHDs and the health services, or collaboration between doctors, still not streamlined enough. But I think that's where organizations like TOGA can actually completely transform the system by collaborating with their members to do IntelliTrials. But also the other barrier is, even though we got the IntelliTrial program under the government, there's still no contractual obligations for LHDs and health services to do IntelliTrials. So that's another thing I think we have to work towards, is that embed IntelliTrials as routine business through operational plan service level agreements.
So I agree with all that. I'm sure Alexandra's sort of scratching her head at some of this stage as a patient. You know, some of these perceived barriers would seem that with a bit of will could be overcome.
Yes, I think a lot of it is that it's just a new framework to work within. And, you know, we're used to doing clinical trials one way. And as Sabe points out, it's definitely more work to set up a sort of local site structure, more work for the local sites. But it's one of those things that once it's established, it becomes a framework which is just there. You can use it, you know, for whatever clinical trial you really want to. So it's got a lot of potential for the future. And I mean, remote accessibility is so ubiquitous these days. The idea that you still have to travel somewhere specific, like to a capital city, to access something is a bit bizarre, really. So I think it's inevitable that IntelliTrials will go that way as well, where you know they come to you, particularly with the levels of competition to get drugs into the marketplace and to get them adopted by patients. So I think it's coming. It's just probably taking a little bit longer than we'd like.
Fantastic. So the facilitators, one of the great facilitators has been the pandemic, giving people the experience and the need to give it a go. The other facilitator would be patient experience, that like yours that you just set out, Alexandra. But either of you, what else do you think's one of the facilitators, Sabe, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the IntelliTrials program and nationally and how that's going to help?
All right. Thank you. Yes. So the IntelliTrial program is an MRFF-funded program, New South Wales, ACT, and then Queensland-led every other state and territories. So what the aim of the program is to create an interconnected and networked clinical trial system using telehealth or IntelliTrial model so that the whole Australia becomes a clinical trial country. So regardless of the postcode, patients should be able to receive it closer to home. There are also coordinating centers, you know, regional clinical trial coordinating centers supposed to be in each state to do cluster startup. And then there's some seed funding, then also incentive fundings. And the other enabler will be actually harmonizing the ethics and governance approval system. So hopefully when the system matures, you activate the trial when the patient become eligible for a trial. So that will be the dream for this program. And I'm hoping that it will happen within the next 18 to 24 months.
Yeah. So it sounds like the national program really will help facilitate some of that back office function and help hopefully solve some of those sort of governance issues that, you know, we shouldn't fail to acknowledge that when you first do IntelliTrials, there is a, learning curve. It is time consuming to get through all that paperwork. But once you've done it, you know, a couple of times, it does get easier and the recruitment benefits are considerable. So we're running out of time. So hopefully that this has given people a flavour of about teletrials and its benefits to patients and its benefits to TOGA. I noticed that there's three trials listed on the TOGA website. So either of you, what do you think TOGA members should do now to make teletrials a reality, their centre?
Both of us can take it. You take first.
I don't know, to be honest.
All right. Yeah, I mean, okay. Yeah, so I think in terms of TOGA members' contribution to teletrial, most of them are PIs. So all they have to do is consider every trial as a teletrial, and then you talk to your fellow members or the sites you normally deal with, and hopefully through these government teletrial programs, you will be able to talk to the RCCCs, the Regional Clinical Trial Coordinating Centers, and then they will do the connecting work for you to connect the sites, to do all the ethics, governance, cluster startup work, supervision plans, and the system will enable your trial to go wherever you want it to go. So I think consider every trial as a teletrial and then talk to the system.
I think from a patient point of view as well, you know, feeding onto what Sabe just said, one thing patients and patient advocates can do is ask their doctors about what the facilities are that at their sites for teletrials. Obviously, we have patients scattered all around Australia. So having that conversation with your doctor or with your cancer centre, you know, what facilities do you have available for clinical trials to be done via telehealth? Do you envisage that telehealth is going to be used in the future, just to, you know, raise the awareness of teletrials and telehealth as a facilitator of that?
Yeah. My advice would be just to give it a go, to be open-minded, have a go. You know, you can look at the table of procedures in a trial protocol, and a lot of those things can be done at a distance. You don't need to get the patient into one centre to do all of the procedures. So I think that internationally they're looking to Australia as being at the forefront of this field. The Australian experience is heavily cited in the international literature, thanks to the work of COSA, led by Sabe Sabison, John Zolsberg, Eva Segalov and others. You know, I think it's now we've got a good foundation we need to keep pushing on so that we can bring the molecules to the patients like Alexandra much quicker. So I'd like to thank Takeda, who has kindly supported this podcast series by an educational research grant. Thank you to TOGA for putting it on. Thank you to Science to Life for the production. If people are interested in delving into a little bit more detail, we'll also list some references on the TOGA website, some useful tools and toolkits that people can refer to. I'm also the host of another podcast called the Oncology Journal Club podcast, and we're doing a teletrial special where we'll look at some of the latest literature and data about teletrials. So look out for that as well. So thanks to everybody for listening. Please share the podcast and we look forward to listening to the next one in the series.
Thank you.
Thank you.